Hey, what's up? This is Mark Lopes from Metal Church of Rasta Boss Band. Let's pray. And you'll listen to Aftershocks TV. And don't forget to keep it fucking metal. Yeah.
All right, Matt and Tom back with everyone here on Aftershocks TV, and we've got a very special guest joining us on today's episode. As we'd like to welcome to the show, ex-order guitarist, vocalist, Mr. Kyle Thomas joins us. What's up, Kyle? Thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
Hey, fellas. Thank y'all for having us. We appreciate it. I'm doing fine.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, Kyle, man, let's get into it. This fantastic new record, ex-order, the band's fourth LP, Tal Defectum Omnium. It's out now in Nuclear Blast. First release since 2019, stellar comeback, more than the Southern Skies. Man, I can't believe that's been over four years ago. That's been out already, man. Crazy. But, yeah, I mean, just just a lot to unpack on this record, Kyle. I mean, this has got to be, obviously, the most comprehensive sounding of the four albums, obviously, in my opinion, because it's a musical journey, really, on this one. You know, like none that you, I think you guys have done before. I mean, of course, you know, you got your signature thrash groove metal sound on here, but there's also, you got those heavy punk rock hardcore elements on, you know, tracks like Forever and Beyond Despair and Sedition. You got the doom laden tracks like Year Six and The Tale of Unsound Minds. And I just think what makes the record, man, such a fluid listen and a complete listen. It's not just another, you know, solid extreme metal record. It's just so well balanced. The sequencing of the songs, I think, are perfect on the record. So, I mean, walk us through, I guess, the decision and the impetus to really incorporate, especially those punk and extra doom metal tracks on the record, which obviously is something pretty new to the band.
Well, ultimately, for me, the goal is always to try and make a better product than the last one, you know. And I mean, it's all subjective to taste. You know, somebody else might listen to it and go, oh, it sucks, it's not like old Exhorter. But you know, I mean, for us, it's about growth as a musician, as a songwriter. You know, we're assuming the production duties ourselves, so yeah. You know, and by Exhorter standards and Exhorter years, a four and a half year gap between albums is actually not that bad.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, as far as the elements that might seem to be new to some listeners, let's get the punk part of it out of the way. Mm-hmm. Exhorter actually started out on the punk scene in New Orleans. So, we were, most of us were metalheads with a foot in the punk side of the door. And whereas our drummer Chris was he was a mohawked, you know, combat boot wearing true punk who was really starting to just kind of get into metal at that time, I guess. So we were all what they later called crossover at that point, and the heavy metal community just wasn't terribly interested in us at all. We were ugly. We didn't wear spandex and we weren't playing glam metal, and we wrote our own songs. And that was something that the promoters on the metal scene in New Orleans at the time had no interest in. So the punk rockers, quickly said, come over here and play with us. So our very first show, we played at a NoFX gig.
Oh, wow.
And okay. that was August of 1987. So, no, 86, 1986, August of 1986. Wow. So, yeah, we just kind of built from there. We opened for a few bands here and there, and then I don't know, we had lightning in a bottle, I think, at the time, and it grew quickly. So we spent the first 4 or 5 years growing on the hardcore scene, opening for bands like Agnostic Front, Corrosion of Conformity, back in the punk days of Corrosion of Conformity, the Rollins Band, the Henry right. Rollins Band on the first album, Hot Animal Machine. They weren't even called Rollins Band yet. So yeah, that's where we cut our teeth. So we've always had punk elements about us, especially our attitude. But we felt like, man, you know, we might as well dig a little deeper back and put our, you know, a foot back deeper than we ever maybe have with the punk side of things. As fans of punk and hardcore, we did that. And two, maybe three of the songs really kind of mirror that sentiment on this album. And as far as the doom thing goes, I think it's fair to say our first doomy kind of song we ever had was probably Cadence of the Dirge on the Law. It was the first one where I really did mostly clean singing with harmonies, and it was a slow dirgy, which is why we called it that. Drum cadence. And so it all kind of just wrote itself, I guess. So fast forward to 27 years later, More Than Southern Skies, there's definitely some songs on there that have a lot of doom elements in it. And, you know, we were a band that as teenagers, a lot of us were listening to a lot of doom stuff on the side, in addition to thrash and hardcore. Long before I was ever the singer of Trouble, I was a fan. So, we just really kind of felt like making an album that took you on a journey. We definitely paid more attention to thrash and hardcore on this one than probably the last album, but we didn't want to lose the progress that we made with More in the Southern Skies, with having even more well thought out and disciplined song structures, but still intricate. And if you listen to most of the albums that you grew up listening to, whether it be Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, usually these albums took you on a journey. It was you know, Queen, for instance. You listen to A Night at the Opera by Queen, and there's some songs that sound flat out heavy metal, and there's some songs that sound like vaudeville. Right. So I don't ever want again in my life, it's been done before and I don't want to do it again, where you set the tones for guitars and drums on autopilot and every song just has the same mix and it's all the same kind of ideas. I like having peaks and valleys and a roller coaster effect. We did the Latin Gregorian type chant, the title track, Defectum Omnium. I have a choral background. I sang Gregorian chants when I was in high school, so that was where the influence of that came from. Jason did a beautiful acoustic piece by himself right before Lacing the Well, called Three Stages of Truth.
Yes.
So these are things that just take the album, and there might be a moment where it's just beating you down, and then bam, there's a smooth acoustic piece, and it's almost like falling off a cliff into a pool of water. And that's the effect we want to give. There's moments of despair on the album, there's moments of anger, and then the very last song, Year Six, wraps things up with the only ray of sunshine and hope on the entire album. And we felt it important to maybe leave that at the end of the album, to show that, yes, there is a possibility of change here in this world of shit that we all live in.
Yeah.
And it made sense for us to bring in Rick Wartell and Bruce Franklin from Trouble to play leads on that song.
Well, the other big change I want to talk to you about, obviously, on the record is now that you've taken over the reins on rhythm guitar. And man, you did an incredible job. I think a lot of us didn't realize how you know well you could play the guitar. Talk a little bit about wanting to obviously do that. And second part, how is now that going to change, if any, you know, I guess maybe your vocal approach, because now you got to obviously do both. And, you know, you're such a powerful singer. So having to do both, I'm sure you're obviously well prepared for that, you know, for the live, but talk a little bit about those changes on this record and what you're going to do live.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. When it comes to writing parts, which Jason did as much or more of the writing of the riffs and rhythm guitar playing on this album, our bass player, and I'm a former bass player, so we have a joke around here that's two bass players walk into a studio. but we don't really think about setting up the vocals around the guitar playing to make it easier for me. If anything, a lot of the songs are still just as difficult as the old songs to sing and play. So it's challenging. It is, but I was a musician long before I was ever a singer. I never wanted to be a singer. I took 5 years of trumpet when I was in grade school, private lessons. That's really what kind of made it so much easier for me to gravitate towards any instrument I ever wanted to play. I took bass lessons as a teenager, played in bands, multiple bands before I was ever a singer. And my musical development kind of happened in such a way that learning those fundamentals at an early age made it a lot easier to do this, which is pretty much what singing and playing guitar is. It's multitasking. Sometimes I do have to take a metronome and slow the beats per minute down tremendously in learning how to figure out what phrasing I'm going to do with my syllables against whatever rhythm I'm playing. Sure. Because vocals, you know, you can easily go and make it easy for the singer, but we just hadn't thought about that. And really that's a bit of a crutch to me. So I embrace the challenge. So, you know, the all the guitar playing and bass playing I did in the 80s and 90s that I put on the back burner and on the shelf for so many years kind of came back second nature to me in this instance. So I may be the world's okayest thrash guitarist, and if that's the best that I ever do, that's fine by me, because we've got Pat O'Brien in the band, and why do I need to be any better than I am if we've got him? But to do, you know, it, and I've joked with him about that being the world's okayest thrash guitarist, and he's been great in encouraging me to feel comfortable and confident in my shoes as a guitar player. He's like, dude, you're no slouch on the guitar, that's for sure. But to do what you're doing and singing, he said, that's what everybody's scratching their head at right now. So I don't want to question it too much, because then it probably start being a problem for me.
Sure, getting to your head and stuff, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fire! Hey, Kyle, yeah. I gotta say, I'm highly entertained by this album, like, because I love the punk, the hardcore, not forgetting your trash metal fans and roots too. So it's entertaining me as I'm kind of doing my thing, walking the dogs, walking around, and going, God damn, here's another flavor in, here's another groove in. That almost kind of like a sucker punch. But when you write the very first song, obviously, you know, there has to be the number one song. Does that dictate where you're going? Or do you just write like 12, 15 songs and then it becomes an album? Like, what's the kind of the roadmap when you write song number one, and where does it go from there?
When we started the pre-production process for this album, it really happened kind of like lockdown happened in 2020, and we were on tour with Overkill at the time, and we all went home and we're going, shit, we just started supporting them on the Southern Skies. Now we're shut down. So instead of sitting there and crying in our drinks over it, we decided, let's just get to work on the next one. And Jason had a head start. He had about, you know, maybe 3-4 songs that he already had kind of on the back burner in some sort of skeletal format. That we took out, dusted off, and started working on, and he was just on fire with the writing, and that's when I decided let me start doing my thing too, and getting my feet wet again, and I wrote, I don't know, probably a half a dozen or more songs at the time, at least half of which probably we didn't even use for this album, because it just, we looked at it at the end and was like, save that for a solo album, because it doesn't really fit with Exhorter. Right. That was always very important to us, that the new material that we're writing is worthy of the Exhorter logo and being called an Exhorter song and feeling like an Exhorter song. So really, there wasn't just one song. We kind of just took handfuls of what we had, threw it on the table, and just started sorting out the best of what we had at the time and focusing on that. And Jason and Sasha together put about 8 songs together, and I was at home working with a drum machine and some recording software, and I put about 4 of them together, and we just, every time we got together to jam, we present the songs to each other and say, I like this. I think this could probably be improved. This part's really good. This one, not so much. And listening to each other, for starters, that's a lot of times you get people in the room like, it's gotta be like this. And to me, that doesn't serve the song very well. That serves the individual. So we put the emphasis and the glory on the song itself.
Right.
And I think that's probably why this album is as cohesive as y'all put it, that we listened to each other and threw it against the wall, took what stuck and kept it, and either repaired or flushed the parts that didn't work so well and came up with something that better complemented the rest of the song.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of interviews, you know, different people talking about whatever questions they have, and Tale of Unsound Minds comes up a lot in interviews. And I think I saw one where one dude said it was his favorite album. And you said, well, I was talking to a guy yesterday. He didn't like it at all, right? So it's like, you know, I thought that was funny. But for me, that fucking song is just tremendous. It's just, I listened to it this morning, just doing a little bit of research again. And then I just went back and listened to it again straight after, because that guitar tone, the sound just at the start, and this build up and this beat and this groove. And I know it's all about the pandemic and all that kind of shit. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, maybe with limited time here, but just the track is just tremendous. So, you know, if I had to pick a track of this album, that's the one that just speaks to me. And the whole album is tremendous. We, you know, Matt and I, we like to get on bands that we like and get to have a conversation with. We got to like the music. We're not just going to take an interview for the sake of just filling airtime. And this was a big one for us. So when Matt contacted me this week, he said, fuck, we got Exhorter, dude. We got to set this up.
Cool.
Yeah. So we were excited to have that. But that song for me is just, I think it's just a tremendous track. Talk me a little bit about, I know it's about the pandemic or whatever. Talk me a little about the song itself and kind of where it ended up being from where it was.
Sure. Yeah. That was one of the ones that popped up. Well, you know, probably halfway through Now, at the end of the first half of the songs we were starting to put together, and that's a Jason idea. He started with that one and showed it to me and Sasha, and we started jamming on it here at the room, and I just said, it's a song, the way it's designed, it's just really set up very easily for the vocals to just go in any direction I could have taken it. So
vocals are beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. And we just said, the last song, like I said, the last song On the Law was where we really started experimenting with clean vocals. And on More Than the Southern Skies, there's a lot more of it than there was before. And it makes sense. I'm a much better singer than I was when the band first started. It's not really unlike the title track of More Than the Southern Skies, and the fact that it's a slow, doomy kind of song with a lot of feeling, a lot of emotion. And therefore I felt it was just as important to have a really, really big spectrum of vocal style in it. So, it's funny because, like you said, some people are really like, this is the best song on this album. And there was one guy that was just like, a ballad? Really? It's like, a ballad?
What? It's a ballad.
Okay. Ballads are love songs or songs about lost love. Jeez. And this song is nothing like that. So it was inspired. It's a very dark, brooding kind of sound in this song. And when it was handed to me was during the pandemic. So I'm like, it felt like mental anguish and isolation. And that, for me, the pandemic was just like Tuesday. I like being alone. I tour a lot. So, I get my peopling in when I'm on tour, but when I'm home, I live on a dead end street at the very outskirts of town, right on the lake. So it's like people come to my house if they're invited, because it's kind of out of the way, but nobody just drops in, and I kind of like that. I noticed, I was reading about so many people not even surviving the pandemic, not because they got sick, because the isolation, and it was really like, wow, that's stark, that's really kind of heavy. So I felt like, let's write a song about somebody being tormented by being in isolation, but when they finally start getting around to socializing, they don't even know how to do it anymore, and they'd rather be alone. And what a conundrum that is.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kyle, now you've got this, obviously, this outstanding new record that's really resonating with everybody. And of course, the next question is going to be, how do you get to promote the fuck out of this thing? Obviously these days playing festivals is one thing, but touring I know is another. A lot of bands have had to, obviously cancel some tours overseas, like Anthrax, because of logistical costs. It's tough to get out there, but obviously I know you guys are getting ready to do something eventually, obviously, for it. So what's the plan now, I guess, for playing shows and touring for the new album?
Well, yeah, logistically touring is a nightmare. What you've ultimately got is inflation has caused the cost of everything to skyrocket worldwide. So the things that it took to tour before the pandemic now cost sometimes double. And here's the shit part. The promoters and venues are still trying to pay out on a scale that was pre-pandemic or even less, asking for mercy, please, show us mercy. Well, what about us? None of this happens without us, and we always seem to be the ones that get the short end of the stick. So our way of surviving it before the pandemic, we used to tour in a vehicle called a bandwagon, which is kind of like a poor man's tour bus. It's a flatbed truck with living quarters on the back of it, and it's got all the amenities of a tour bus. It's just less expensive and not always the smoothest ride. It doesn't have the axle comfort that the multiple axle coaster that the buses have. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we just can't afford it anymore. The price of renting this kind of vehicle has gone through the roof. The fuel has gone through the roof. Yeah. So we still feel like we want a tour. So Jason, our bass player, bought a van, and we just rent the van from him while we're out on tour, and pull a trailer and do it DIY style. I mean, we're all in our 50s or late 40s, and you know, it's not the most luxurious way to tour, but it's a nice van. It's got captain's chairs and a fold out, you know, sweet, a nice bench that folds out to a bed. So we just doing it old school with a van and hotels, and that's the way. You just have to find a way. And really, there's bands that have been doing that all along anyway, like Melvin's, I Hate God, they've toured like this for years and playing at a high level. So I always figure if it's good enough for Melvin's, it's good enough for me.
Sure. No, absolutely. Well, for everyone out there right now, you need to go ahead and check out, obviously, before they hit the road, you need to check out the new record called Defectum Omnium by Groove Metal Legends Exhorter, out now on Nuclear Blast. So, Kyle, where should we send all the listeners and viewers here to pick up merch, to just keep up with the band in general and what you guys are up to?
In the U.S., the only place to get official merch is at www.exhorter.com. And I'm the one that actually runs the web store. So everything that you get from there, I'm personally packaging up and shipping it to you myself. We've got vinyl and CD. We've got shirts and, you know, we've got some old stuff there. Now that the selection is kind of clearance status at this point, but you know, we're adding new stuff here and there, and we'll have stuff on tour as well. In Europe, in the UK, it's Plastic Head Megastore. Mm. So PhD is a place to get official for there. But yeah, that's the best place to support us, obviously. Or you can go to Nuclear Blast's websites and order the vinyl and CDs there. Otherwise, follow us on the socials, and you know, we run them ourselves. So everything you see in there isn't from a PR team; it's us.
Fantastic! All right. So if
you're not enjoying it, it's our fault.
Don't blame anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Awesome. Okay, everyone. Defectum Omnium. It is from Exhorter. Go check it out. And Kyle, man, appreciate you chatting with us, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, man. Hopefully, we'll see you on the road soon.
Likewise, fellas, man. We'll see y'all soon, hopefully.
Thanks.